Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
Live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to this show through iTunes or Stitcher, anytime, anywhere, for free. I'm your host, Lady Sue. And what do I do when I'm not hosting Word of Mouth? I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, restaurants, big brands, startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Today, we'll start off at the Union Square Green Market with Chef Ronald Su of Le Colonial, the classic French-Vietnamese Midtown New York institution. And then we'll have here in the studio, Christo Zazowski, beverage director of Altamira Group, where he builds teams and beverage lists and more for the acclaimed restaurant group featuring Chef Michael White's sometimes rustic, other times fine dining Italian cuisine. And we'll talk what it's like to work with Chef Bianco and owner Amas Fakani, plus Christo's new baby, hidden talent, dream job, and how he ever managed to win the heart of wife Tia Keenan. Stay to the end, because we will wind it down here with Risto in the studio as we taste a little something he brought us. I have no idea what that is yet. I'm excited to find out. And now let's head to the Green Market. I'm at the Union Square Green Market with Chef Ronald Su of Le Colonial.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Ronald has the exact same last name as I do.
Yes, but we're not related. She still won't go out with me.
And Ronald, can you tell us... Awkward pause. Ronald, can you tell us some more about Le Colonial? It's a legendary New York restaurant.
Yes, it's been in New York for about 20 years. You know, when it first came out, it was like the hottest restaurant around town, and you know, they had a lot of success early on, and it's kind of been fading away a little bit. You know, and the owners, Jean Goutal and Jean Douanier, and there's other few owners, kind of approached me, and they wanted to bring a little life back into it for its 20th year anniversary, which was this past year. Mm-hmm. And they thought a good way to revitalize it would be to hire a new chef and kind of revamp the menu, modernize it a little bit, and that's kind of where I came along.
Wow. How did they find you?
Facebook. No, I'm just kidding. No. They actually had a friend of a friend. Oh, you know, Soa Davies kind of introduced us. She had a friend that knew the two Jeans. And they kind of put us in touch with each other and then played a little bit of phone tag. And, you know.
Lo and behold.
That was it. Yep.
You have a pretty incredible background yourself. What were you doing before Le Colonial?
I was working at Le Bernardin. I was there for about 7.5 years. Started from the bottom. Kind of worked my way to the top. My last position at Le Bernardin was senior sous chef and chef for repair consulting.
Wow.
So I did a little bit of everything for chef repair. So, you know, it was a very great experience for me. Mm-hmm. Great honor to work mm-hmm. over there in that kitchen.
So we are encountering some alliums, including the very last of the ramps
yes.
this week.
Uh-huh.
How are you incorporating ramps and other oniony, spicy greens into your menu?
Well, I feel like onions are something you can use all year round, but during the springtime you get a few special varieties such as ramps. Red scallions are pretty rare. And I'm actually just working on a new chicken dish because one of my friends came by, had the chicken, said it wasn't that good. So I got to revamp it a little bit. So, you know, I'm incorporating that. I'm going to char them, pair it with like a chicken breast or
So what is the chicken dish? Can you describe it?
It is a Hainan Jifang, which is Hainanese style chicken rice, which is very popular all over Southeast Asia, and each country has their own style of it. And I'm going to do a Vietnamese style of it. So I've been working on this dish for probably about 3 weeks, still can't quite perfect it yet. So I'm at the green market trying to find other substitutions I can use for ramps, meaning that they're going to be gone pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we got a lot of good varieties here.
So how does a Vietnamese chicken rice, how will that differ from a Hainanese chicken rice? Because that is one of my absolute favorite Asian people dishes.
Right. Well, the fundamentals of it are the same. You basically have like a steamed chicken, or not a steamed, but a poached chicken that you you cook in water or whatever, and then you develop this like really aromatic broth, and then you take that broth and then you cook the rice out of it. For me, I would say the star of the dish is the rice and not really the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we're trying to execute both really well. But you know, in Vietnam, instead of using like a soy sauce-based dipping sauce, you would use a spicy fish sauce-based sauce with this dish. So that's kind of what I'm working on. Usually, you would pair it with like sort of some freshly cut
mm-hmm.
onion, cucumbers and tomatoes. But we're actually going to pair it with some something from the onion family. We're thinking of charred ranch since it's springtime and actually goes really well together.
Is that a traditional thing to add something alium-ish to chicken rice?
In the rice, it is. You know, usually people put like some kind of onion, something from the onion family.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would make like a garlic oil and throw that into the rice and then steam the rice together with some chicken fat. So it's kind of typical. They don't really do it with anything charred like
right.
I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think it's good to offer a little twist.
Up the gourmet factor.
Yes, and doll it up a little bit. So.
Okay, so we see here these gorgeous bouquets of.
Chive flowers, like a chive
they
blossoms.
Are so pretty. They're
yep.
purple in contrast with the long green stems.
Yes, they're really nice because not only do they have great flavor, they also provide like a little different color, and they're very pleasing to the eye. You can pick off the little petals and use them as like a very delicate garnish if you were doing like something fancy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just another vegetable in the onion family that you know, not many people know about, but it's really should be used more than it actually is.
For home cooks, just gives it that extra
zing. If you got a hot date you want to impress, chai flowers would be a good way to go. Not only can you get your date flowers, you can also get her to eat them too.
Oh, I love that.
So it works.
Wow. And then you said that red scallions are rare.
Yes, red scallions are pretty rare. I don't feel like they're as sweet. They're a little more oniony, a little more savory.
Okay, as
compared to the regular
scallions. Okay,
You know they're stronger, and they're just, you know, they offer that red part. And you know, keeping scallions green is really hard because you very rarely eat the white part of the scallion raw. So you end up cooking it and you end up losing that nice green color. But with red scallions, you still get the flavor and you can maintain the nice reddish color on it too. So it's another substitute you could do.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I very much look forward to seeing the results of your experiments.
Right.
Thank you for not putting out into the world another sad chicken dish.
Thank you. Well, I already did put one out there. I'm just trying to get rid of it and you know, improve the menus.
Keep on improving.
Yes.
Keep on chugging.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Ronald.
Yep, no problem.
Welcome back to the studio. I'm your host, Leiti Su. And you're listening to Word of Mouth with me on heritageradionetwork.org. And now for our people we like. We have here Risto Zizoski, beverage director of the Alta Maria Group, live in the studio.
Yes, I'm here. I'm live.
You're alive.
I made it. I'm illegally parked in the front of Roberta's right now, so So I'm here.
Is that going to be okay?
Yeah, they said it's fine.
Okay.
They said they'll get me if there's a problem.
Okay, because this morning we had other priorities in addition to the radio show.
Yeah, starting at like 5:30 this morning.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Can't even imagine. So Hristo has a new baby.
Yep. Stereo. Stereo Zazowski. He's named after his grandfather and his great-great-grandfather. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's 5 months this week, and he's great. He's teething, but he's getting big. He's great. Yeah.
So Stereo, whom I ran into at the Wine on Wheels Wheeling Ford event a couple weekends ago, is actually a cute baby, like not like an ugly one.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think it comes from, like, he has a big face like you.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, no, he's, thanks. Sure. I'll take everything as a compliment. He'll grow into it.
He has a very moon face, you know?
No, he's a big boy, but, he's great. And the chance I can help my wife out is in the morning because, by the time I get home from work, he's already in bed. So, yeah, I mean, I try to get up around 5-6 when he's kind of starting to stir a little bit in the morning and give mommy a little break.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm awake. So no caffeine.
You've been awake. You don't really do coffee?
Nah, not really.
Wow.
Once in a while, just maybe in the midday. I used to do it always when I used to work doubles.
Yeah.
Before dinner shift, just to kind of give me a little pop. But, maybe like half the week I'll have a cup here and there.
So you're a hardworking immigrant machine.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Well, now, let's see. I'm counting up the restaurants in the group that you do all the beverage stuff for. Okay.
Yeah, there's 11 about to be 11 restaurants in the United States, 3 international as well. I focus more on the day-to-day of the domestic because international is a little hard. Yeah, no, it's great. I have a great team at every restaurant. I have the privilege of managing and giving focus to all my guys there, mm-hmm. Whether they're all somms or managers or head bartenders. It's great. I work with a lot of talented people, and it's great.
The restaurants are, for instance, Maria Ivory, Costata, Osri Marini.
Yep.
And we could go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And also one in upstate New York.
We're about to take over the Bedford Post Inn up in Bedford. Yeah, that should be open under our full management and our full menu. Probably like, I can't say, like hopefully end of the summer, beginning of the fall.
Right, you have just a couple more openings in the Alta Maria Empire this year, and then
that's the only one this year, and then we have a couple next year.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of it, I think, with, you know, that I can see. I'm on a need to know basis.
Oh, okay.
So I just am told what needs to be done, and I get it done.
Where are you from?
I'm born in Rochester, New York. My parents are off the boat from former Yugoslavia and Macedonia and Greece.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. What is Macedonia really like anyway?
It's the only landlocked part of former Yugoslavia. So unfortunately, we have no beautiful beaches or anything, but it's mountainous. I mean, the Baltics are very well represented. A lot of lakes, very clean. I mean, it's pretty beautiful. It's pretty natural. Great, great agriculture, great produce. Fairly just, you know, still a lot of farmland. It's you know, it's pretty pure.
And not yet a hot tourist destination.
No, no. People have gone. It's nice, but it's not. Yeah, it's not like a. It's more of a locals place. For sure.
Okay, so every single...
If you want to hide from people, you can go there.
Really?
For sure. Yeah.
Okay, I'll remember that the next time I commit a
crime. No, there's a lot of beautiful areas. It's just not on people's radar because it's still such a small country, still kind of finding itself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
After all the, you know, one of the last countries after former Yugoslavia and the Cold Wars and, you know, all the wars down there and stuff like that, so...
So I'm from Taiwan,
uh-huh.
Which I think the big, huge tourist attraction there is how great the food is and how much better it is than in all of China.
Really? I need to go. I will take your recommendations when I go out there.
So what's like the, you know, the thing to go to?
I mean, probably the best peppers and the best tomatoes and the best cucumbers and onions and garlic and just, yeah, really, really great produce that is just, you know, simple.
Yep.
You just put some oil on it and some salt and pepper and red wine vinegar and you're good to go. And, you know, we have like lamb and goat and those kind of things are.
Were you born here?
I was born here.
Okay. And you were sort of destined to go into restaurants for better or worse.
Exactly.
Okay. What happened?
Yeah. Well, my dad had restaurants up in Rochester, family restaurants / diners, six in total. And I started working not all together, like just after another and take a break. And
okay.
So after his first break, there was another kind of spree of three. And I started then. I was 12 years old, wanted to kind of hang out and start learning and started bussing tables and peeling potatoes and sorting silverware. And by the time I was 14, I told him I wanted to cook. So I was next to him on the line cooking at the age of 14 and running the line with him by the age of 16.
Wow.
Yeah. Flipping eggs and omelets and pancakes and Reuben sandwiches and, you know, triple decker clubs and prime rib and all that fun stuff.
So in Life on the Line, Grant Achatz talks about how important it is to be able to just work those breakfast eggs, work them. And once, you know, you told me that you think that with some practice, you could give him a run for his money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the first thing I remember. It's a hand motion that, you know, it's like riding a bike.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I remember my wife, my girlfriend at the time, but my wife Tia, telling me that line. It's like I gotta reach out to him. You need to challenge him. And I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah, I found that really cool.
Oh,
She's the one who told me about it. So when you mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, I know about that, and that's why the story came about. Of like, yeah, I'll challenge him on a egg flipping contest.
Okay, so if I were, let's say, you know, for some reason tomorrow I have to go fail at the breakfast line, like somewhere. What would be like, I don't know, three main tips, or just at home by myself?
I mean, first thing you do when you get home tonight, then, if you have to do this tomorrow, is take a well greased, unscratched pan or a nonstick, so
yeah,
whatever is easiest, and put a little bit of clarified butter in it, and take a dried piece of end toast, and just work it until you can start flipping it. Like it's like you're just basically turning it over like a baby.
Okay,
yeah,
like
that's
a baby.
Baseball. You don't want to like the thing. The point is not to like. It's got to be like super like catch it.
Okay.
Catch it. Yeah.
Okay, so do that. So
I did that for like a week next to my dad before I did anything else.
Really?
Yeah. He like basically put me there. He's like, okay, do this. So all morning I was doing that. Probably for like, well, that wasn't a week. It was a weekend because I used to work weekends because I had school. So
okay.
I would go there and then, yeah, he's like, here's a pan. Here's a little bit of grease in there, whatever, butter. And took a dry piece of toast because we saved them for croutons, you know, and I said, here, good at it. This is the trick. This is what you need to do.
Yep. Okay, so go practice. Then tip number two.
Oh, for working the line,
Or just making the perfect eggs.
Oh,
it eludes many people.
Well, leave them out. They gotta be temper. They gotta be room temperature.
Okay, that's a very key.
Yeah, that's a key thing. And I mean, what's the third thing?
Be awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Great. Thanks. I'll take that. Boom. Fill that one in.
Ah, oh, come on. Give me one more.
I mean. Just know your temperatures. So I know your over easies, know your up, know what a basted egg is,
right.
Know what, you know, sunny side. I mean, a trick I used to do, which they didn't like me doing when I was at the CIA, was like popping the white. You know how the white is like that membrane?
Yeah.
And I used to always pop that to make sure that was cooked. So if people wanted over easy eggs, there wasn't even any rooster juice going on.
Oh.
And they're like, don't ever do that. I'm like, okay, that's fine.
You're like, dude, I learned this from the streets, the mean streets of Rochester.
Yeah, I learned this from exactly.
Your mom also worked in a restaurant?
Nope. My mom worked in factories. She worked at Kodak and then at another factory up in Rochester.
Oh.
Yeah, no, she kept the house. She was a mom and worked and cooked at home and she did everything.
How many siblings?
Just my brother.
Just older, younger?
Younger.
Okay, is he in food?
Yeah, he owns a burger hot dog joint up in Brockport in Rochester. So that's where my dad works now. So it's my brother and my dad worked that. It's a simple burger joint in a college town. He's been killing it since 2003.
Okay.
So he's been there for 11 years, kind of owning the town.
So did you ever consider doing something else? Not in food?
Well, like, so you might.
That's
all I knew was food. Your question is was my dream job?
No. Okay, what is your dream job?
No, we'll talk about that later. Anything else other than food? I don't know. I never really did anything else, honestly. I went from every single part of the restaurants, you know, working the line, going to the CIA, realizing, you know what? At the CIA, I took everyone had to make some money, so I was like in catering and was a waiter, and I'm like, wow, I actually like this. And I was able to talk to people from being a shy kid, and I decided, you know, I really want to learn the front of the house and, you know, the whole service aspect. And I got really into that. And after CIA, went to the front of the house and worked my way up, you know, the ranks of finer dining restaurants, and then got into wine when I moved to New York. And yeah, I just started living in the front of the house. I liked the whole service aspect and the hospitality part of it. And it was really great because I empathized with the chefs of like, what the hell? Mistake on the ticket. We can't do that. Or what's going on? To like, you know, and understanding how much work they do to. Yeah. So I really I'm really lucky to have a well-rounded approach, which I know a lot of people do. But, you know, it's it really means a lot. I mean, I think you really respect everybody in the whole restaurant.
I think so too. There's a lot to be said for empathy that makes you just so much better at your job. Like, for instance, folks who start as sommeliers and go become wine salespeople, or folks who, do toe the line between being PR, being publicists, and being journalists.
I mean,
it's just like seeing both sides of the coin is a really magical thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can say I've done pretty much almost everything in a restaurant. I haven't done any sales. I haven't done any like wine sales like that or any anything outside of restaurants. But
maybe that's for when you go into retirement.
Yeah, maybe.
But then Risto is dying to tell me about his other dream job.
Oh, well, no, you asked me and I was like, I have no idea. But then I thought about it. I'm like, wait, I'd probably be a masseuse. And you're like, why should you be a masseuse? And I'm like, it was the first time, I think, okay, so this is what happened. I was, the last restaurant I worked for my dad, I was a senior in high school. And of course, it was all college girls. It was in a college, it was another SUNY school up in Geneseo.
Oh, wow.
And it was all college girls as waitresses. And they all loved me. And it was great because they were like, oh, let's go out. And, you know, not like they wanted to take advantage of me. They just wanted, it was great. And one thing led to another, and we hung out, and I would have sleepovers at their house because it's easier to stay in their dorms than it is to go all the way back to my parents' house, which is like 40 minutes away from the restaurant. And my dad's like, go have fun, and girls, take care of my boy, and make sure he's safe. I was very behaved. I was a very prude, shy boy. But I got into like, I don't know. I was getting into massages, and that's, I was like, okay, and it was fun, and yeah, that's.
So you just, yeah, you put it in a Trojan horse, you're like, hey, I'll massage you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's like, that's brilliant. Every shy guy has their like.
I think that was like my first, you know, it wasn't like, I don't know, it was just, it was okay, and I was like, wow, I feel comfortable, and. These, you know, the people were nice and girls, you know, whatever.
You gave them happiness and
yeah.
And it wasn't uncomfortable to be like physically in contact with another human.
There was, you know, there's places, you know, you didn't touch, but it's okay. There's rules.
I had to squeeze the edge out of Risto because he's,
I know,
so
she's making me
good.
She's making me sound creepy, and I'm,
he's
like,
so good. You know. He's so like shy and reserved and modest. You have that immigrant modesty.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I struggle with. I mean, especially as an Asian woman, I've only recently learned how to say something for myself.
Yeah, you've been, that's great. I mean, I think just experience, and I think with confidence and experience, you start opening up and feeling like you have a say on something, mm-hmm. and eventually leading people. And that's kind of, it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. And your parents must be so proud because you've, you know, come a long way since sleepovers, massages, and the egg, the breakfast line, to like kind of reaching certain heights of fine dining in New York, which is crazy.
Yeah, no, I worked at Jean Georges, and that was an amazing experience for 7 years, and mm-hmm. really fine dining. And now I have the opportunity of doing a little bit of everything with the Altamirea Group, with all these great restaurants, from, you know, Maria and I Fiori, and Ristorante Marini being like tablecloth and, you know, very like proper and
Upper
standard
side,
you know, the great standards, to like Louder, Osteria Marini, and mm-hmm. you know, Butterfly, and just the kind of fun places you can go in, get a good dish, get a good drink, and you know, and just still have good quality.
Mm-hmm. So as with every show, we talk social media info so folks can connect with us and tell us what they think. So Hristo is at Hristo Z, it's HRISTOZ on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
Both. Well, I'm so glad it's the same.
It's the same. Yeah, yeah. No. I try to keep things simple.
Good, good. It should be that
first
way.
First name, last initial.
Yeah. I'm happy it's your first name and not your last name, because your last name is actually harder than your first name, but they're both really hard. So hashtag WOMSHOW, WOMSHOW on Facebook. It's / WOMSHOW. Follow us on Facebook. Stay in touch. And I'm at Leitihsu, LEITIHSU. Heritage Radio is at Heritage_Radio. As always, stay close, because after this very quick commercial break, we'll dig into how Hristo, the shy guy, won the heart of wife Tia Keenan. She's a cheese expert.
You are listening to Presidential Pardon by Tax Star here on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse, and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, 5 generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to the studio. I'm Leitihsu. I'm your host. You're listening to Word of Mouth on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And we have here live in the studio Hristo Zizoski, beverage director of the Altamirea Group, which has like 10, 11 properties.
Yeah, like I said, about to be 11 in the United States, and then four,
about to
and,
be 11.
And three international.
In Istanbul, London, China. I mean, how nutty is that? Wow. Wow. How'd you meet your wife?
So I lived in Hell's Kitchen and went into a restaurant that she was working at.
And Casa Lula.
She was at Casa Lula. She opened Casa Lula. And it just opened, and I didn't know about it. A friend or a person recommended it to us, and it happened to be 2 blocks from my apartment. And I was there with my friend, just saw Reuben on the menu, which I love Reubens and pickles and all that fun stuff. And we order this food, and, you know, it was kind of quiet. It was around 10:30. And I hear, you know, Tia, and the other owner, going back and forth about menu ideas and changing and stuff. And I was like, she was so like fierce and so like passionate. I was like, I look at my friend and in all honesty said to her, like, I really need to get to know this girl and this woman. I need to meet her. I didn't want to date her. I just wanted I need to meet her. Like, I don't mm-hmm. know. I think we're going to be friends or something like mm-hmm. that. And, was like small chatting and of course, you know, opening a restaurant. She tells me she doesn't remember the first times we met because she was probably like working 18, 20 hour days. Mm-hmm. And, but finally she really, I was like a regular and I went there, you know, the food was good. I ate a lot of grilled cheese sandwiches and got a gut for sure. but a few months down the road, I think, you know, she realized she'll tell you the story, but she'll say like, oh, I realized he was coming in to see me. And then we became friends.
That's a good way to drum up business, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. We became friends. And then, you know, of course, you know, we exchanged numbers and like, hey, we should hang out. And, you know, of course, how that goes. Oh, sure, sure, sure. And we were friends on, at that time, it was MySpace, not Facebook. There was no Facebook back then. It was like, that was like up and coming. And I don't like social media that much anyway. So I was like, okay, I'm on MySpace and sure. And she messaged me one time and I said, oh, I'm in Macedonia visiting my grandparents. And she's like, oh, cool. Well, when you come back, come say hi and, you know, bring me back some cheese. And I'm like, okay. So I took it literally and I brought her back some cheese. And she says that to everybody. She's like, I always tell everybody, bring me back some cheese, bring me back some cheese. I mean, obviously she's the cheese girl. And no one did. I was the first person ever to bring her back cheese. And aww, she really like took it to heart and found it really, really sweet. And we started dating from there on.
So what kind of cheese did you
bring? It was just like a domestic Macedonian like feta. Like mm-hmm. it was cryovac'd, so it was easy to, it was literally, she's like, she made family meal. I remember she made like family meal within the next day. It was like some kashkaval or some simple like, you know, cheap cheese.
That's the way to a cheese woman's heart.
Hey,
it's pretty straightforward, isn't it?
Yeah. I try to listen. That's the thing. Men don't listen all the time.
Oh,
But
yeah. You hear that?
We try
to listen.
I listen. It's not easy. It's not like we don't want to. It's just not easy.
So is it? So we'd call her a cheesemonger.
No. She's a...
No, she was not a buyer.
She's a fromager. And then she's now worked into doing more consulting and all restaurant aspects. She's gone from menu development and opening restaurants that way to strategy, to expansion, mm-hmm. to she does a lot of different stuff, from just cleaning things up to openings to she does like small little projects or huge projects. And it's pretty cool.
It's pretty funny. Yesterday I was hanging with Andre Mack and Amanda Dell and our mutual friends, and I was like, hey, are you still... I gotta go home early, guys, got my radio show tomorrow morning, who's the guest? Christo, and they're like, Tia, she's awesome. Like, you know, a lot of love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't stir the pot too much. So apparently I don't break any bridges. So Matt Andre's great. And Amanda, we used to work together. So yeah, it's cool.
So, okay. It's kind of funny. Like, if we just take a step back stereotypically to have a fromager and like a sommelier, like the cheese and wine duo, it's pretty funny.
That was our sign at our wedding. There was she painted this piece of wood and she made a picture of a wine glass plus a wedge of cheese equals a heart. That was our,
really?
That was at the entrance of our wedding. Yeah. It's actually at the entrance of our door right now too.
That's cute. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I wonder what cheese you guys served. It must have been like really delicious.
There's a lot of cheese. There's always a lot of wine and always a lot of cheese.
You know how sometimes wedding food is pretty sucky?
Oh man, our wedding, we had three different caterers. we had roasted lamb and roasted pig and
like, you guys were barely dressed, but it was like, no, I'm just, it was just like everyone stuffed their faces.
Yeah, it was great.
Three different caterers.
Yeah, my wife, she knew what she wanted. She did great.
She sounds like a get shit done kind of woman. I really like her. I've never met her yet, but
yeah, she makes me look like I'm lazy.
So your you know, leadership team at Alta Maria is pretty unique in that mm-hmm. Amas Fakani came from being an executive at Merrill Lynch and mm-hmm. a Michael White is this guy who just makes like some of my favorite pasta in the city ever. Like I first moved here, I was an early fan of, you know, before Convivio closed, and then Maria, like, to die for. I sit there at the bar by myself. So what's it like working with these guys?
They're both, I mean, I really enjoy working for both of them. Chef White is super creative, super passionate, remembers everything where he's been in the whole world. So he's always got a great always great story and explanation of why and the little nuances. And he's really, everything that is on every menu we have at all our restaurants are there for a purpose. It's not like, oh, we need to, like, he, you know, has a story from his butter burger style Wisconsin, you know, patty melt and butterfly to bringing the perfect, like, mold for this pasta from Liguria for iFiori. It's pretty cool. We really have a lot of great, it's just great. And then Amas, I mean, I work with Amas a lot more. He's definitely the guy, my boss and the person I report to, and he's super hands-on. This is the way, I mean, I think the only way we've expanded so rapidly is for having such a leader like Amas. I meet with him pretty much every week. I can call him on the phone and talk to him for 2 minutes or an hour if I needed to about things. And he meets with everyone. Like, he is hands-on. I know, you know, Chef PJ and Jared and Bill from all the restaurants that work under Michael still meet with him. And he has a vision, and him and Michael really work close together. That's the benefit of just them two being the owners of this whole company, is that I only report to them.
Yeah.
And we can just get things done easier that way.
Right.
And I'm very fortunate. And the same way with my team. My team comes to me, and I meet with all my guys, and my office is my bag, which is my computer and like a couple like different, you know, notes and stuff like that. But I travel and I go to all the restaurants and hit them, you know, between one to, you know, five a day. And I try to just make sure everyone has what they need. And, you know, some places, you know, need more love than others. And it's always like a roller coaster. And it's like, great, they're okay for now, and then I you know, then I'll spend some time there, and it's really great. I try to give all my guys as much autonomy as possible, and as much autonomy as they can handle, as well as that they can learn from. It's fine. I learn by making mistakes. I learn by, you know, when I was at JG and I became a sommelier at 23, and my head sommelier there was like, okay, here, you just do this, and I'll keep an eye on you, and that's how I learned. It was like, there's no manual. It's like, let's do it. This is the reason why it works. I mean, granted, there's more technology and toys and stuff now. But, you know, if, you know, Nadine wants to pour whatever she wants to pour by the glass, I'm like, great. You know, you're behind it.
Yep.
You're selling it. It's great. You know, I had some great mentors on top of, you know, the you know, Amas and Michael, and great, great talented GMs and other managers in our company. We just have just a huge pool of talent. You know, I have mentors like, you know, Bernie Sun and Daniel Janis and Raj Parr and Tim Kopeck and Patrick Capiello, and like all these guys who are peers but friends, and also always had my well-being, seeing like, always, like, I mean, those are the guys that, like, I'm like, wow, I you know, they always have little pointers of like, this is how it worked for me. And like, I don't hold back. I will sit down with my guys or my, even my friends, whatever, and just be like, all right, well, let's play both sides of the card and the coin, and see what will happen if we do this, or what will happen if we do this. And, you know, yeah, the grass, it's kind of the point where everything is so good. We have such great products coming from like farmers market and everything, and all our menus are good. The standard of everything has just gotten so much better that now it's more like, there's not really, the grass isn't really greener anywhere else. It's more like, how can we make the most of what we have here and make it yours and take ownership of it? And I have no problem giving as much, you know, like I said, I'm not really self-conscious like that. It's like, I want to keep sharing and keep giving people the power to do what they need to do.
You sound like a really good boss.
Yeah, I'm not really a yeller. I don't really yell. Well, there's nothing really to yell about. It's more like, let's, what happens, and let's fix it.
Well, how old are you?
34.
And congratulations on the food and wine best news, best sommelier.
Thanks.
That's what the word is called.
Yeah, best sommelier 2000. Yeah, this year 2014. I'm one of the best new sommeliers, Wine and Spirits magazine. Yeah, that was really a great surprise. And
Food and Wine.
What did I say?
Wine and Spirits.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Food and Wine. Food and Wine. I'm so sorry. It's early.
I wanted. you know, my last couple of questions for you. So do you think that there's anything that it's not all restaurant groups that are started by a fellow who's so accomplished in another industry, that obviously there's stuff in common, like watching the numbers and blah blah blah, but it having a unique leader and a unique boss grow this successful and rapidly expanding restaurant empire.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Amaz takes stuff from, you know, the other industry he once had a career in?
Oh yeah, I mean,
to this world.
I mean, you have to. You can't just. You have to take the experience you have. I mean, he hired me. I mean, I can name a lot of people and why he hired them, because he wanted these talented people to kind of be part of this. So we learn together. Like, we'll sit down and be like, wait, how can we make this better? And what's going on all over? What do we need to talk about? Or, you know, let's follow up on this. It's not like it's literally like we make a list and we follow through.
Yeah.
And we're learning every day. It's great. There's like I said, there's no handbook for any of this. It's
what's one thing you've learned from him and the way he leads.
Be patient. Even though it sounds, from far away, it looks like we're really doing a lot. Like all these restaurants, before we even opened them, some of them have been in the plans for like 3 years.
Really?
Yeah. So the problem is, when it does happen, it all sometimes happens all at one time. And that's how timing is with contractors and permits and all this stuff. But there is a reason for everything we're doing. And I'm very, very fortunate, and I'm really happy to be part of it.
There's a game plan. So sometimes companies don't have plans, and sounds like you guys have it all.
No, I mean, nobody has everything.
Not figured out, but yeah. Basically at least some kind of vision.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for you guys. So my last question before we get to hang out with what you've brought here to taste.
It's opening up. It's been poured for 30 minutes.
Thank you for pouring it in advance. So experienced, taking great care of us here in the studio. So, John George, when you were there, you guys won the James Beard Award. It was only two sommeliers at the time, you and Bernie Sun.
And one more. So Bernie was the beverage director for the company, and then it was me, and it was two somms on the floor, myself and another somm always
Got
on the floor.
Yeah. Okay, so, but still, it went from two to three, like, bodies to, like, five at Jean George, and just looking at, like, 11 Madison, going from, like, I don't know, I'm approximating, but something like 4 to 8.
Yeah, I remember talking to Beth in the day, it was, like, John Reagan, and he's like, yeah, we're expanding, we're trying a different system where, like, there's a psalm on each station. Nomad, like we talked about, has, like, 8 psalms.
Yep.
I've went from, like, 5 psalms on the floor in some places only need 1, number 2. It's great.
Is there a rise of the sommelier?
Yeah, sure. I think there's a lot of talented people out there. I think the industry is growing. I think the community is super tight. There's a lot of reasons, you know, like, it's great. I think restaurants understand right now food costs so much money.
Yeah.
And you can only make so much money on food.
Right.
That beverage is where you're going to make your money.
Right.
And I think it is finally starting to be noticed that you need to have the right professionals on there to try to, you know, be guides and assist and don't lose the opportunity of that sale.
Absolutely.
So, we're in a great place for beverage in general, bars, cocktails, beer, wine. I mean, you got to think of, you know, what else can make, you know, money or be profitable. The model has changed a little bit.
And with that, with a couple minutes left in the show, we're going to wind it down.
Yeah, we're going to wind it down.
Wind down.
With, speaking of drinking, we're going to drink something. And it's something really special because it's the first time that a Korovan has ever made it onto Word of Mouth. So first off, what is a Korovan?
It's a device that lets you pour wine without opening it. So it's a needle that goes through the cork and pushes argon gas inside, and in result pulls wine out. So oxygen never goes in the bottle and actually preserves the bottle with you able to pour portions out of it.
Excellent. So we're going to do a little...
Yeah, I'm blind tasting you.
Oh, God, don't do that. Well, I kind of
You told me to ask you questions, so now these are my questions for you. So...
This is Risto's turn to
to
make me sweat.
Well, I mean, the most important thing is, do you like it?
I love it.
All right, so
let's
start.
It's freaking delicious. My taste buds are like,
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, as you can see in the color, and I'll try to...
There's some age.
Yeah, it's okay. Turning a little bit brown on the edges and still red in the middle, so that means it's starting to give some age because red wine loses color. It's you can see through it, so it's probably a thinner skin grape, right?
I feel like I know what it is, but
and put your nose in it, and is it highly aromatic or lightly aromatic?
I think it's like medium plus aromatic.
Does it smell like delicious, or does it smell like how about that?
It smells totally delicious. It smells like a red burgundy.
There you go. Very good.
I didn't see the bottle.
She knows what she's talking about, people. Yeah, it's a... let me pull it out. It's... I literally blind tasted her. It's a 96.
Oh, wow.
Nui St. George from Domaine Larlot, from my collection, from my little cellar. Premier Cru. So it's old school, classic red burgundy, Pinot Noir. They use all their stems, so that's why you get a little bit of that kind of stemmy, earthy, on top of all that kind of dry cherry and earthy deliciousness.
Flowers. And...
Yeah. See? Wow, she's not talking. That's good. Like, it's, it means it's good. It's like the wine's good.
It's like, this is very, this is eminently drinkable. So this is from your own personal cellar?
Yeah.
So why did you, I mean, of all the delicious red burgundies out there, last question for you, why did you pick this one?
Oh, I mean, I didn't have that many to choose from.
Oh, right, Korovan?
No, it's...
Oh, you opened it. Okay.
Yeah, you can see. It's
duh, not, never it's, mind. You don't open it. It's not open. It's amazing. It's like an imperceptible little needle.
Why did I pick this? I thought it was got some age. I love the producer. I knew it was going to be kind of ready to go and aromatic on the nose. And I wanted to bring you something nice for loving me on the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. Well, this is Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on Heritage Radio Network. That was just Hristo Zizovsky, beverage director of the Alta Maria Group. And I'm headed to the Aspen Food and Wine Classic this weekend. I'll bring back next week what's most innovative and delicious. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.